The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
06. You can keep those texts coming. I'm joined on the line now by Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin's finance spokesperson. Piers, you're very welcome to the show. What would Sinn Féin prioritise if in government? What would your budget include next week?
Well, look, this would be a budget for change. It would be one that would put workers and families first. And in doing so, we'd double capital investment to deliver 20,000 social, affordable and cost rental homes. We would make sure that the cost of living was brought under control by reducing the cost of rents and banning increases over the next 3 years. And that would put a month's rent back into those 300,000 renters' pockets. We would slash the cost of childcare. This can be done up to two-thirds over a two-year period. And we would ensure that people have the right to retire at the age of 65. Alongside all of that, Kieran, our other priority is obviously in the area of health, badly exposed during the pandemic, shown as the cracks that were there long before that time. So therefore, a significant investment, both in current and capital, to build the additional bed capacity we need in our hospital, to recruit the frontline staff to deal with the waiting list we have, with nearly a million people now nearly waiting for appointments.
What do you suspect, or what do you figure out the impact would be of the ban on rent increases for that period of time? Because I know as soon as you mention it, I already know they're coming in on 53106, landlords texting in, individual landlords who maybe own one or two properties saying, that's it, if that happens, I'm out of the market. Therefore, the rental stock dwindles.
Yeah, look, what's the alternative to that? Like, is the alternative that when people are paying on average €2,000 in Dublin and they're increasing in double-digit figures in outside of Dublin, that prices just continue to rise out of control? Families are finding it extremely, extremely difficult. We know it's an issue that leads to homelessness, but it's also leading to serious pressure on individuals. So we're doing two things. We're actually banning the increase for a three-year period until our capital investment programme kicks in properly. And delivers the type of homes that we need. But the second thing is, banning it at the minute just locks in the price that's there, and that's not good enough. So that's why we want to bring in the refundable tax credit that would reduce your rent by 1 month's rent per year. And that's something that can be done, that would be delivered if Sinn Féin were in government today.
But what will you do? What will your response be? What would Sinn Féin's response be if it turns out that landlords en masse abandon the market?
Well, look, first of all,
because the first thing they'll have to do is they'll want to sell with vacant possession.
Yeah, well, look, first of all, we can tighten up in relation to that in terms of vacant possession and the rights that people have. But, you know, we know that there are landlords that are leaving, and we know that there are accidental landlords that have been coming into the sector. But let's be clear about this here. The rents that are being charged in some cases are eye-watering rents. And the idea that...
No, I'm not denying that. I'm not denying that. But I suppose what I'm trying to get at is the law of unintended consequences, and that you bring in this measure and that actually what happens is landlords leave the market, the rental stock dwindles, and therefore you compound the problem that you're trying to solve.
Well, first of all, the home is still there. First of all, so the home either becomes another rental property owned by somebody else, or it becomes a home that is owned by somebody else. But on top of this here, we're not just relying on the private sector, because we know that that's what the government have done. They've put landlords, they've put institutional investors and developers first. The result of that has been clear to be seen from everybody in terms of the housing crisis that we have, in terms of affordability, the cost of house and the cost of rents. So alongside those measures, while we're giving that reprieve to people who are renting, we're actually stepping in as a state, building 20,000 social, affordable and cost rental homes. That is 9,000 more than what the government planned to do. Looking at innovative ways to look at the existing stock in terms of buy and renew, but also in terms of new builds across our cities and elsewhere outside where there is a housing pressure that is no longer confined just to our urban centres, but is right across the state at this point in time. So it's a two-pronged approach. Mm. It's not relying on the private sector. That's what got us into this mess in the first place. The private sector will always have a role, but the state needs to step in. The state needs to be able to deliver houses that are affordable at cost to purchase and to rent for individuals, and they need to do that at the right scale. And that's what we're setting out today through the policies that Eoghan Brin has developed to deliver that additional 20,000 units in 2022. And that needs to then continue year on year until we have caught up with what should have been happening for many years before.
So some of the policies you mentioned there and some some others contained in the document today amount to about an extra 1.5 billion spending on what the current government are planning. Where is that 1.5 billion going to come from? Because the government are already borrowing money to spend the amount they're doing.
Yeah, well, look, you know, the key difference between us and the government is the level of priorities. So our priorities are, you know, about, as I said, giving those type of reliefs to people, giving people the relief in terms of the cost of childcare, the cost of actually healthcare as well, and also the right to retire. So how you can fund that is actually looking at what the SRI said today in their report, for example. Yes, you can look at tax increases, and we do look at tax increases, but only on incomes above 100,000 euros. So making sure that there is solidarity tax for individual incomes above 140,000 euro, making sure that we're not funding gold-plated pensions of pension pots up to 2 million euro. But also what we need to do, as the SRI and others says, is there's a capacity to borrow for capital investment. Now, if there ever was a time to borrow for to build the type of houses that we need, it is now at a time when we
can borrow more. That's the short answer. The government are borrowing money for their budget, and Sinn Féin's solution is borrow more.
Well, that's what the SRI is telling you. The SRI is saying double capital investment. Now is the time to borrow. The NTMA, who borrows for the state, is saying we have the capacity to borrow. It is a time when there is negative interest on the rates of borrowing. But you have to remember,
we should listen to the SRI. They're the experts.
Well, no, like you know, the SRI are a think tank, and they come forward with their proposals. But everybody knows that there is a capacity to borrow at this point in time. There is a finite amount that you can borrow, but we're talking about an additional 1.5 billion only for capital purposes, only for capital purposes, okay. Only for building the houses. If we do not do that, we have a serious problem. We will have a serious problem attracting forward foreign direct investment. We'll have a serious problem in terms of business competitiveness because the homes aren't there. And we also have a bigger societal problem with the ESRI
think it would be catastrophic if the government were not to increase carbon taxes as planned. Should you listen to them about that?
I believe that the carbon taxes shouldn't go ahead at this point in time, because the reality is they are going to make families poorer. And we've seen
so the ESRI are wrong on carbon taxes.
We've seen
right and borrowing wrong on carbon taxes.
No, it's not, as I said, it's not just the ESRI who are making the point in terms of the time to borrow on capital.
The ESRI are who you cited. I didn't bring them up. You did. And they also are opposed to abandoning any plans to increase carbon taxes.
I'm strongly, as I said, of the view that that is the wrong approach to take at this point in time when you do not provide the alternatives for individuals. Taxes that change behaviour have a role, and that means carbon taxes in the future, as we supported other taxes that change behaviour. But tell me this, if you increase carbon taxes on the price of oil or in gas, what are you doing? You're only making those families poorer, right? And you can use as many tricks as you want to give with one hand and take with the other. That's absolutely nonsense. We have to create the alternatives in terms of making sure that people have alternatives to using the type of energy that they're using. That means increasing investment, as we're suggesting, in terms of retrofitting throughout homes, but also increasing our public transfer fleet and other environmentally measures that are in terms of our budget. But look, there is no point increasing carbon taxes and then on the other hand talking about, well, how are we going to protect all these people from the cost of energy that we've just decided to increase?
Let me ask you then about corporation tax, because obviously that's the other big news story of the day. And in all likelihood, by the time I come off air at 7 o'clock, that golden calf will have been slaughtered. The 12.5% rate will likely have been abandoned. Is that the right decision?
Look, we've set out our stall in relation to this. We made a detailed submission to the Department of Finance, and what we argued for is what the government were arguing for was to retain the 12.5% rate, not as the rate, but as the effective rate. So basically no company able to reduce the rate as they have been doing down to close to zero in terms of the aggressive tax planning we've seen over many years. The government obviously failed to reach that objective. It was always going to be a big challenge because of the practices that were facilitated by previous governments over many years. We have no international friends on this in this matter. The crucial thing for us is that a 15% rate can still be competitive if we invest in the other areas that make our country competitive. What does that mean? It means housing. Going back to the original point, it means education, third level education. We need to invest in it. We're slipping down the scales, the ranks internationally. We need to invest in childcare, and that's the type of the proposals that we're bringing about that are normal in other European countries is about slashing the cost of childcare. They're the type of things that we need to do, can do, and should be doing now, because we have, we are going to become a bit less competitive in terms of the international market. But it's right, we support the OECD BEPS process, because what was going on with some of these, you know, these are only companies that have turnover of 750 million euro. It was absolutely appalling and shouldn't have never have been facilitated.
Do you worry when you look at it that we're getting too fixated on that headline figure of corporation tax, the 12.5% versus 15%, and whether the words at least are included or excluded, and that there's not enough debate and discussion about where profits are taxed? Because you listen to some economists and they say that's the real meat and two veg of this recommendation from the OECD, and this is the thing that will impact Ireland more than anything else, is that the profits of these big companies are unlikely to be taxed in Ireland to the degree that they are at the moment.
Yeah, so you're 100% right in relation to that point. So that is, there's two pillars to this agreement, and the second pillar, pillar two, is about the rate, whether it's 12.5% or 15%, which is likely now. But pillar one is about where the profits are going to be taxed. That has already been agreed to. We agree to that. It's a proper and it's a fair measure in relation to developing countries, that they should be able to get tax from sales and activity that's happened in their countries and not booked in low-income tax countries. That is already going to cost the state.
It's not just developing countries. It's not just developing countries.
It's not just developing countries.
France and Germany, big economies will do better than Ireland out of this.
Ireland's the loser in this. There is no doubt about it. We're losing about 2 billion euro. That's already been acknowledged, and that's already been factored into the fiscal stance over the next number of years. So the 2 billion euro I've hit is already factored in. The rate is a separate issue, and we're not clear in terms of how that rate will impact us into the future. And that's, as I said, why we need to look at other areas that make our country competitive. But there's also a lot of detail in relation to this here. So the countries are looking for carve-outs. That means that, yes, the 15% will apply, but not apply to this. There is also questions in relation to how Biden's proposals in terms of tax will impact on this. And that's crucial for Ireland, because most of our companies are headquartered in America. So you could agree something at the OECD level. If Biden goes ahead with his shield proposal, then, you know, it's kind of all bets are off again. We're in a, you know, there's a serious issue for Ireland. So all of this has to be carefully considered, and we'll look forward to the public of the text to actually see what has been agreed.
We mentioned the ESRI. Alan Barrett, the CEO of the ESRI, is going to be on the show later. Before I let you go, Piers, it looks like Simon Coveney is likely to attend this Northern Ireland commemoration, this partition commemoration, however you want to describe it, this event in Armagh. You don't think he should go? Why?
Look, I think the government should take the lead of our president, Michael D. Higgins, in this, when he said it was inappropriate for him to attend such an event. This is an event not about reconciliation, but an event that is about commemorating and celebrating partition, which had devastating consequences on our island. We were threatened with an almighty war if it wasn't agreed to at the time. And it's absolutely inappropriate for the government to attend. Can I say this to you and to your listeners? Can you imagine, would there be a discussion in France or a discussion in America of a similar nature, you know, to commemorate, to attend the government of the day, to commemorate either an invasion or a partition of their country? It simply wouldn't happen. But, like, you know, it probably doesn't take a huge leap of the imagination, because remember, this government, or at least a part of it, was the same party that wanted us to commemorate the Black and Tans.
Yeah, but we talk about a new dispensation here, a new country. That's not on the cards in France or the United States or anywhere else. And Mary Lou McDonald has said, you know, in any discussions about that dispensation, everything would be on the table. I mean, in a united Ireland, should we commemorate the Battle of the Boyne on the 12th of July?
Look, you're
that's an invasion of a country.
There is huge amounts of there is huge ways that we can, and we all need to be part of it in terms of reconciliation, reaching out in terms of the hands of friendship. Sinn Féin have been involved in it for many, many years. You'll note the different activities, indeed, lectures in relation to the partition of the
lectures.
Country is different.
The 12th of July.
And the 12th of July will continue to be celebrated in a united Ireland, because I've said this to people at the Orange Order who've asked me this question. In my view, as an Irish Republican, there's not a thread more green in our national flag than there is orange. Orange is a part of our tradition as well as green, and the flag is.
But not when it comes to the establishment of Northern Ireland. I mean, the Solemn League and Covenant, should that be commemorated? The signing of that.
I I believe, as a Republican, as somebody who is elected to represent the people of Donegal, I believe that our government should not be involved in commemorating this. I believe that Michael D. Higgins, as president of
I'm not asking about that anymore. In a new dispensation, the Solemn League and Covenant. Should we commemorate the Solemn League and Covenant, the signing of the Ulster Covenant?
I don't believe that we should. Like, people are entitled to commemorate. And let me be clear. People are entitled to commemorate events that they choose to commemorate. Nobody should.
No, I'm asking about the state, though. And if Sinn Féin, and you sorry, Sinn Féin want to be in government. You want to be a representative of the state.
But the state shouldn't be involved in that type of commemoration that has impacted dreadfully in our state.
1916?
That led to it. But of course the state should, because the state, unfortunately, was founded as a result of 1916. But people will decide to commemorate different events. The question here is it appropriate
so
for
we'll
our
keep
head of
celebrating
state?
Our events. And, you know, if you're a Nordy of the wrong persuasion, you can go off and do your own thing. The state doesn't want to know about it.
That's not at all in relation to it. I don't think, as I said, I don't believe it's right. And I believe that Michael D. Higgins, our president, called this absolutely right. I think that the public were behind him in relation to this here. And you can see that in terms of opinion polls that came out subsequent to that it is inappropriate for the state to commemorate or celebrate the partitioning of our country. And it's as simple as that. Now, is there roles for the state in terms of reconciliation, reaching out? Of course there is. This is not one of them. This isn't an event about reconciliation. This is about commemorating and celebrating. And as I said, as the discussion on United Ireland intensifies, we need to all stretch ourselves further. And we have in the past. You've seen Martin McGuinness, reach out the hand of friendship to the English Queen. These are all positive gestures in terms of recognising that there are other traditions. There are traditions that are held valuable by other sections of people on our island, and they need to be respected, they need to be recognised. But it is completely different from the state to be part of celebrating events that had a dreadful and catastrophic impact on our island.
Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin's finance spokesperson. Piers, as always, thanks a million for joining us. Stay with us here on the show. We're going to be talking about Tina Turner after the break.